Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. Today's daily editorial is a little bit less so than earlier this week, just because I am working on the weekend show, and quite frankly, this week has been a lot. There's been a lot of daily editorials, and I hope that all of you have enjoyed them. That being said, I am chatting with Mark Chandler. He is the managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I will post a link to below this interview. Now, Mark, the next 2 weeks, there is a lot of data, a lot of central bank meetings, just a lot of news that's going to hit the wire, that some of it obviously will have an impact on the markets in a long-term sense. A lot of it, I think, will have also a very short-term impact that we need to understand what more the long-term implications are. Let's break it down week by week. Starting with next week, we have some key economic data out of the U.S. and the Eurozone. We're going to see some Q3 GDP numbers. The Eurozone is also going to publish an estimate for their CPI. In terms of central bank meetings, we have the ECB, Bank of Japan, and Bank of Canada all meeting. Let's start off with the economic data. What do you think investors and those following the markets need to pay attention to when it comes to either the GDP out of the U.S. or Eurozone or the CPI?
Yeah, it's a good question, because it's true that these next 2 weeks are just really jam-packed with a lot of data and events that I think will shape how the rest of the quarter pans out. So beginning with the economic data, from a big picture, the point is that the business cycles have become more symmetrical, more in sync. And so just like we were all hit with a very hard economic time in Q2, the major economies contracted, we're going to get a big bounce back when we get the Q3 GDP prints. So Europe likes to report it on a quarter-over-quarter basis, and they're looking at like 9% after like almost a 12% contraction in Q2. And the U.S. numbers are just going to be incredible as well. GDP for the U.S. looking something on the magnitude of, say, 25 to 30%. However, as you know, investors, business people, they really look forward. And Q3 GDP data is really rearview mirror. It'll be nice to know. There'll be a headline reaction. But the real story is, what about Q4? What about how the economy is growing now? And with the virus breaking out again, surging in Europe and in the U.S., people are revising down their forecasts for growth in the current quarter. In fact, some people are even talking about a possible contraction in the Eurozone in the current quarter. We got their preliminary purchasing managers index, and they were back below 50, the composite, for the first time since the summer, first time since July. So we are looking at strong Q3 GDP numbers. Fine, we react to them. That move is going to be short-lived, because we will turn our attention to Q4, and Q4 doesn't look nearly as good. Even in the U.S., the economists have revised down their forecast with the idea that we probably won't get the fiscal stimulus, and we're looking at something on the magnitude of maybe 4% annualized growth after something, say, 25 to 30 here in Q3. The Eurozone CPI is the other piece of economic data that tracks the market. It'll come around the time of the ECB meeting itself. ECB might have it when they meet, but essentially, we're still looking at very little change numbers, which keeps the CPI headline rate below zero. Europe's still experiencing deflation. Those downside risks that officials have talked about seem to be materializing.
So, Mark, isn't the problem, though, and as you've outlined with this data, is it is backward-looking and everyone will be focused on Q4, but the problem with focusing on Q4 is we're not even halfway through that quarter. We're about a third of the way through, and things are, I think we can say, getting worse when it comes to COVID and when it comes to a general economic restart because, well, even in Europe especially, we are starting to see some shutdown. So it's almost impossible to predict what the economy will look like in the next couple of weeks, let alone at the end of the year. So then it does kind of fall on these central banks and any potential stimulus or changes in monetary policy. Do you think we're going to see anything, any major changes out of the ECB, Bank of Japan, or Bank of Canada?
That's a good question. I would say, like, even in good times or in normal times, predicting things about the future is always kind of risky, huh? But the so the central banks are meeting, and I don't think that anybody's going to do anything. But it's not so much about doing. I think that right now what we're looking for are some word cues. And the word cues probably take place, I mean, more from the ECB than the Bank of Japan or the Bank of Canada. What I find interesting is the Bank of Canada has already announced it's pulling back from some of its efforts to stabilize the markets because it says it's no longer needed, like buying mortgage-backed securities. The Federal Reserve, on the other hand, wants to keep those facilities open as a backstop just in case, thinking that that helps boost sentiment or confidence. The Bank of Japan is in a tough position. They also reported deflationary conditions, but there, they're looking past it because part of the decline in prices is that the government has tried to stimulate the tourist industry by basically giving big discounts. And so this weighs, just like we know from the Eurozone, that their CPI numbers get weighed down by things like an emergency cut in the value-added tax in Germany, or sales promotions for vacations and tourists in Italy and Spain. So the Bank of Japan wants to look through those numbers, and which means that they won't do anything either. The ECB, there's people, I think, at the ECB who would like to do something, but their modus operandi is to make it a policy adjustment when you get the new staff forecasts. They come quarterly. And like the Fed's dot plot adjustment, it's kind of a similar type of story. Have new forecasts, you can adjust policy. And then, so we'd expect then that the ECB President Lagarde talks very dovishly. Like you say, I mean, they're shutting down parts of Europe again. Ireland has been the first to announce a nationwide shutdown, but the restrictions seem to be likely to ratchet up before they come back off. And so that's going to have a serious economic impact. And I think that that's what Lagarde is going to play up, which sets the groundwork for a December move, which would likely to be increasing the amount of bonds they're buying, stretching that period of bond buying out further. That's where the consensus is. I suspect that there might be a chance that they cut interest rates as well. Right now, the deposit rate is minus 50 basis points. How much lower can they cut it? Well, what the ECB has done over the summer is they loan money to banks at minus as much as 100 basis points. So what that means then is they could afford to lower the deposit rate, say, to minus 60 basis points, and still not necessarily adversely impact the banks.
This is just so, go on.
It does sound like, I know where you're going to go. And of course, we've gone through the Alice in Wonderland looking glass. And we're on this other side of this world in which you do have negative interest rates for long periods of time, and we're not sure where the floor really is. And central banks, I think, are stuck with the idea that fiscal policy is too slow, like we're seeing in the U.S., like even the European Recovery Fund. You know, we talk about this Hamiltonian moment. Hello, it hasn't materialized yet. They issued a sure bond. That's for their unemployment scheme for pan-Europe last week. They raised 17 billion euros. It's nice. It's nice to have a common bond, but these are way too small. And so I don't know what to tell you, except we're on this other side of this looking glass, and they're trying to make the best of a very difficult situation.
Yeah, it's just a crazy world we're in, right? And I guess, or what I'm taking away from this, though, is that these central banks, they're still trying to get their footing under them and trying to figure out how bad the second wave is going to hit the Northern Hemisphere. But it sounds like we're going to be seeing some more deflationary pressure before the central banks get any sort of inflation, if they can even spur inflation through their policies. Should that be a focus until the end of the year, the potential of further deflationary pressures?
Well, yeah, you know, I would think so. But here's what's happened. You take a look at what's happened to U.S. 10-year yields this week, up almost 10 basis points. We are at the highest level we've been at in several months. It's up alone this month up about 20 basis points. And it seems to be dragging up European yields too. And so what you're getting basically is an invert, a little bit of a steeper yield curves, right? The short end is anchored by central bank policy. The long end has been, yields have been rising. And this sort of like begs the question, if people are not expecting more inflation, then why should the long-term bond yield rise? And the answer some people are saying is it's about supply and digestion, that regardless of how the election comes in the U.S., that we're going to have more supply of treasuries. And this will just this could force up long-term interest rates further. The problem is that even though our rates have gone up in the U.S. faster than they have in Europe, which means the interest rate differential has moved a bit in the U.S.'s favor, it still doesn't look like it's enough in the U.S.'s favor to really support the dollar, which has fallen against almost all the major currencies and most of the emerging market currencies this week.
So that's a key aspect, too, is that dollar bounce. It's been very weak, right? And if the dollar continues to decline, that can have an impact on a number of different markets, even as we're stuck in any sort of government funding package out of the U.S., the dollar still seems to be, in a way, predicting some funding package to happen.
I think so. So broadly speaking, there might be a couple of exceptions, like the Chinese currency, which has fallen since the end of June in only 3 weeks. So it's quite an adjustment that China's making. And the other currency that looks to be breaking out might be the Mexican peso. It's flirting with last month's lows, which are really like 5 month lows. But rest of the currencies, the dollar seems to be in a trading range. And we get excited when we move to the upper end of it. We get worried when we move to the lower end of it. And I think that I'd expect these ranges to really continue. So that would be, say, in dollar yen, 104 to maybe it's 105 and a half. And in the euro, we're looking at something like, we tested support 117.80 it held. It's a 118 sort of more or less, 117 and a half, 119 range there. Sterling, we've had some better talks out of the UK. Apparently, they've resumed. But still, it's more cosmetic in the sense that there doesn't seem to be that much substance, new substance. And sterling is in a roughly, it's a wider range, more volatile. But maybe it's 128 and a half on the downside, and maybe it's like 132 on the upside.
Okay, so just more range-bound trading. Now, let's look ahead to the first week of November, because this is also going to be news-heavy. We have the U.S. election. Who knows if we'll even have a winner at the end of the week, but we will have at least a lot of the votes would have come in by that point. We also have a non-farms payroll out of the U.S. that comes just before the election, and we have the Fed and Bank of England and the Reserve Bank of Australia all meeting later on in the week. Make some sense of this here, Mark. What matters for the markets?
So everybody's riveted on our circus that we call a national election. And my sense is, here's what I think important, especially for people who are not necessarily in the U.S., sort of more looking at the U.S. election from the outside. Because of COVID, we've gotten... many states have opened up early voting. And I'm not just talking about mail-in voting. I'm talking about waiting in line, going into the polling place. And as of when we speak here today, Friday, something a bit more than 40 million Americans have already voted. And New York State, one of the biggest states, is going to begin its early voting on Saturday. That would be the 24th of October. And so it's possible that by the time the election actually takes place, something on the magnitude of 70 to 80 million people would have voted. And that's about, roughly speaking, about half the number of people that voted in the last election. So I'd say if you want to focus on one state, watch Florida. Florida is interesting because they allow early voting. And unlike most states, they count it before the election day. And the other reason Florida is important is that it's hard to imagine how Trump is reelected if he does not carry Florida. So Florida results could be known fairly early in the evening. And this leaves aside the question that sort of you hit that about the contested election. Like if it Is it, if it's close, will it be contested? And if it's contested, what happens? The issue that the market seems to be toying with, or maybe schizophrenic about, is on one hand, you have this idea that it can be challenged. On the other hand, you've got these polls and some of the demographic issues that make it seem like it could be what people are calling a blue wave, which means that the Democrats get control of both houses and the executive branch. And we would know that early on, too, if that blue wave begins emerging. So the best place to look for it is probably not the Northeast, which tends to be sort of leaning that way in the first place. So we've got the U.S. election. I'd say the other kind of thing to keep an eye on, non-farm payrolls. This is important because we lose a lot of Census Department workers, and we've got some seasonal distortions just given what a crazy year this is. So it's possible that we have a very weak number. Bloomberg economists are warning that there's a risk that we have a negative number. That is, we actually lose jobs in the month of October. And so this, the jobs data will be a key, probably the key piece of data to watch. As far as the central banks go, I'd say that out of the three that meet, the FOMC, the Bank of England, and the RBA, the Federal Reserve is the most likely not to do anything. The Bank of England is probably the most likely to do something, and that is to increase their bond buying. And there's a chance that they cut interest rates. Their base rate is at 10 basis points. They don't necessarily need to bring it to zero, but bringing it down to zero gives them that option down the road. The market thinks that a negative rate is possible, but not until Q2 next year. Bank of England seems they've been sending all the signals to tell the markets that they will probably ease, and that would be on November 5th, the same day that the Fed meets. The RBA is sort of the middle one, the Reserve Bank of Australia. It's been hinting it can ease, and by easing, it's not just a cut in the 25 basis point cash rate, but it's also maybe buying longer-term securities besides the currently. And it's targeting the three-year note. And the three-year note, they target at 25 basis points, the same as their cash rate. But right now, that three-year note is yielding about half of that, 13 basis points in the right now. And so the RBA could go at the November 2nd meeting. But there's some people that think that they would wait a little bit longer, that's till the end of the year, the December meeting, to move. And they'd wait on the idea of just getting more clarity about the state of their economy and of course, the pandemic.
Yeah, you can't blame them for that. And that seems to be the holding pattern that a lot of these central banks are going to be in, not just the pandemic, also the U.S. election, because that does have carryover effects to a lot of other countries. So, Mark, there's a lot to take in here. But if we take a step back and understand all these central banks are meeting, all this data is coming, and we do have this U.S. election, are there any certain aspects, certain areas that you think could actually break either markets, currencies, or metals out of these trading ranges that they have been in? Or should we just be accepting the fact that it's going to be choppy, it's going to be volatile, and we might need to wait until later November, even into potentially next year, to get a better understanding of long-term trends?
Yeah, I think that regardless of how the election turns, the dollar is going to fall, but it might not be next week. The dollar is going to be finishing this week at the upper end of its range against, say, the euro. Actually, the dollar is going to finish at the lower end of the range against the euro. Euro is at the higher end. And I don't know how much follow-through there's going to be, say, after Monday next week as we prepare for the ECB meeting. I think it's important for traders to, you know, you have to know the kind of market conditions in which your trading style works well in. I think that for many people, this is going to be a challenging week, challenging 2 weeks. And I think that for my own personal style, I would rather, what this is telling me really is to be careful around the edges of a range and don't necessarily be playing for the breakout, even though, of course, when it's rising and it's near the top of the range, it looks great. And when it's falling and near the bottom of the range, it looks horrible. I accept that. I realize that. I just think that it really takes a certain discipline not to play for those breakouts, and you give up a little bit if it does break out.
Yeah, that's a key right there. All right, Mark, let's wrap it up here. I know a lot to take in, but I hope everybody can make some sense of all this data and all this news that's coming out and still try to keep a level head because, well, quite frankly, these markets are volatile and a bit schizophrenic right now. Mark, thanks for your time on this Friday. I hope you have a great weekend, buddy.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.